from Porter Street, the podcast in which I, Chris Phillips, report on my teaching, research, and whatever else might occur to me to talk about. Well, it's a new year, a new semester. It's been almost 2 months since my last podcast, but here I am again, ready to talk about some new research and some new teaching. And right now, I'd like to focus on the teaching. I've said a couple of times now I'm going to talk about my work on the Easton Library Company. That's going to come up in the next podcast, which I promise will be less than a month away. What I'd like to talk about this time is a course that I'm teaching for the second time. The last time I taught it was spring of 2009, 3 years ago. It's hard to believe that's 3 years ago. This is my VAST course. At Lafayette, that stands for Values in Science and Technology. And what this course involves is dealing with a problem that's too big to be handled from one disciplinary perspective. It should have some bearing on science and or technology, and it has to have a humanities component, some sort of values, ethics, personal judgment involved. And these courses could be on the world AIDS crisis, they could be on technology and theater, they could be on any number of things. My course is titled Don't Buy This Book, and it's focused on publishing technology and copyright. It takes a historical perspective to it, but it focuses on trying to analyze current problems with historical context. And I've been thinking about what has changed in our own history since the last time that I offered this. For one, there's the rise of ebooks. I had to find somebody at Lafayette who owned a Kindle in 2009 so that she could bring it into the class and the students could see what one looked like, much less what it felt like. Now, one-third of people with college educations in the country own e-readers or tablets. And e-books are now outselling paperback books for most publishers. So this is really a very different climate as far as publishing technology goes. From a personal standpoint, I've also become an author, which has given me a different insight, different knowledge base, certainly, working through contracts, permissions, that sort of thing, but also just how I understand what the arguments from copyright holders' perspective are. Now, as a scholarly author, my perspective is still going to be very different from, say, a recording artist or someone who is looking to sell tens of thousands of copies of their book. Not that I wouldn't mind selling tens of thousands of copies of my book, but that's not going to happen with this one, I don't think. So that's changed. Another thing that's changed is a Supreme Court case, Golem v. Holder. And I wouldn't be surprised if you hadn't heard about this one. This was handed down just about the same day that Google and Wikipedia and all the various mega internet sites went dark in protesting the SOPA and PIPA bills working their way through Congress. And so all of that explosion over those bills pretty well covered up this case, but this case is going to have incredibly important implications for the direction of copyright law, probably over at least the next 10, 15 years. The heart of the case deals with whether Congress overstepped its bounds in bringing foreign works going back to 1923 under U.S. copyright protection. Many of these works had never been under U.S. copyright protection. They had always been public domain for Americans. The change was a result of our aligning with the Berne Convention, one of the oldest international copyright agreements that traces back to the 1880s. We didn't comply with the Berne Convention or even agree to comply until 1989. And during the 1990s, Congress passed a series of measures to try to get us up to date, one of which is to grant the same copyright status to foreign-produced works as are extended to works within national boundaries. Well, this has left publishers, educators, many people who rely on these foreign works for their scholarly work, their creative work, reprints that they make available. This has had a very powerful effect on them and a very powerfully negative one. And so Golan wound up being the name. He's a music instructor in Colorado. He was at the head of a series of petitioners who sued the government to strike down Congress's recent acts, saying that this violates the First Amendment. It violates the doctrine of fair use that has always been part of U.S. copyright law, has been codified as part of U.S. copyright law since 1841 in a Supreme Court decision handed down with Justice Joseph Story writing the opinion. So this goes very far back in American history. The vote for this case was 6-2 in favor of the government. And to give you a sense of how unusual this case is in the current climate of the Supreme Court, a lot of times people feel they can guess ideologically how the court is going to go. In this case, Ruth Bader Ginsburg wrote the opinion for the court, Stephen Breyer wrote the dissent, and he was joined by Samuel Alito. So the usual ideological lines had almost nothing to do with the way this case was decided. And for Ginsburg and the majority of the court, the key issue was, does Congress have the authority to bring materials out of the public domain that have once been in the public domain? And the decision was, yes, Congress does have the authority to do that. There's no reason why you can't bring something out of the public domain as far as the legislative history goes, as far as Congress's understanding of its own work, and as far as the court's historical understanding of the Congress's work. Stephen Breyer puts the question somewhat differently in his opinion. He says, does the Copyright Clause of the Constitution empower Congress to enact a statute that withdraws works from the public domain, brings about higher prices and costs, and in doing so, seriously restricts dissemination, particularly to those who need it for scholarly, educational, or cultural purposes, all without providing any additional incentive for the production of new material? For Breyer, the issue of incentive is incredibly important. Copyright has always been about incentive, according to him. He cites Jefferson. He cites many of the founding fathers. He cites the Constitutional Convention, whereas Ginsburg tends to cite legislative history as well as the international treaties that are so much at issue here. So we have two different bodies of knowledge, two different philosophies of American copyright, and one of them has just gained the ascendancy over the other. What this is going to mean for you and me isn't entirely clear yet. What this is going to mean for American copyright holders who rely on working with foreign works, that's also not entirely clear at this point. But what is clear is that the game seems to be changing. Fair use seems to be under revision at this moment. And where this is going to go is very hard to say. But it's also apparently very hard to get a hold of this opinion right now. The link to the opinion from the Supreme Court's website has been misbehaving a lot. And I have finally managed to get a PDF of that. And since I've gone back to the page, I found that I can't get it again. So I'm providing that link on this webpage for anyone who's interested to see it. I'm also providing a link to the blog that my VAST course is writing. And this week, they're focusing on Golem v. Holder and one of its key precedents, Eldred v. Ashcroft, which was decided over similar issues in 2003, almost 10 years ago. And they're going to be applying this to what we're working on in the course right now, to some issues that we've been considering that are affecting our society right now. And I encourage you to go on that website to comment if there's anything that you would like to raise a question or offer some insight to. I would love to have people weigh in on that. For the reading this week, I've returned to a particular passage that was formative for me in college, one of the most formative passages I read. This is from the chapter in Moby Dick entitled Fast Fish and Loose Fish. And the basic idea behind this chapter is Ishmael's offering a reflection on whaling law. And it's based on two simple principles. A fast fish is a whale that is the property of a ship that is tied to it, tied fast. A loose fish is nobody's property, but can be the property of whoever gets tied to it first. So everything winds up dividing into these two camps, what is owned and what is ownable. And for Ishmael, those are the only two things. Is it not a saying in everyone's mouth, possession is half of the law? That is, regardless of how the thing came into possession. But often, possession is the whole of the law. What are the sinews and souls of Russian serfs and Republican slaves but fast fish, whereof possession is the whole of the law? What to the rapacious landlord is the widow's last mite but a fast fish? What is yonder undetected villain's marble mansion with a doorplate for a waif? What is that but a fast fish? What is the ruinous discount which Mordecai the broker gets from poor Woebegone the bankrupt on a loan to keep Woebegone's family from starvation? What is that ruinous discount but a fast fish? What is the Archbishop of Savesoul's income of £100,000 seized from the scant bread and cheese of hundreds of thousands of broken-backed laborers, all sure of heaven without any of Savesoul's help? What is that globular £100,000 but a fast fish? What are the Duke of Dunder's hereditary towns and hamlets but fast fish? What to that redoubted harpooner, John Bull, is poor Ireland but a fast fish? What to that apostolic lancer, Brother Jonathan, is Texas but a fast fish? And concerning all these, is not possession the whole of the law? But if the doctrine of fast fish be pretty generally applicable, the kindred doctrine of loose fish is still more widely so. That is internationally and universally applicable. What was America in 1492 but a loose fish, in which Columbus struck the Spanish standard by way of waifing it for his royal master and mistress? What was Poland to the Tsar? What Greece to the Turk? What India to England? What at last will Mexico be to the United States? All loose fish. What are the rights of man and the liberties of the world but loose fish? What all men's minds and opinions but loose fish? What is the principle of religious belief in them but a loose fish? What to the ostentatious smuggling verbalists are the thoughts of thinkers but loose fish? What is the great globe itself but a loose fish? And what are you, reader, but a loose fish? And a fast fish, too. Well, that concludes this installation of The Word from Porter Street. And until next time, may you find good words and delight in the words that find you.